So I'd like to begin by thanking CSTE for inviting me to present and for all of you for coming to listen to me. Before we get into looking at our current health data rock stars, because we're going to go behind Missouri's current health data trainings to look at how we made them, we're going to look at some of the history of health data in Missouri, very briefly, I promise you. So we have a photo here of some of our staff who were honored by receiving an award from late Missouri Governor Mel Carnahan, shown at the right of the photo, and he presented them an award for their work in developing Missouri's web data query system. And I should add that we are very fortunate that a few of the people in this photo are still around helping us today. So much of our current work in Missouri is possible because we have a very long history of collecting health data. Our vital statistics system was implemented in 1910, and our hospital data collection began in 1963, with our current patient abstract system beginning in 1993. And for as long as we've been collecting all of this data, we've been sharing it with Missourians for their use. Our first Missouri Vital Statistics Report, which is an annual report, began back in 1911. And the web query tool that those people were awarded for is called MICA, or Missouri Information for Community Assessment. This was created in the late 1990s in order to serve Missouri's 115 local public health agencies, or LPHAs. So many of these are very small agencies, and they may not have staff who are dedicated solely to working with statistics or epidemiology, so they rely very heavily on us at the state to provide data for them in a format that they can use. For many years, Missouri has also given at least some training on how to use data. Until recent years, though, often our web query tools were included as a portion of some other type of course. So, for example, internally, the Missouri Department of Health offered a class called Wading Through the Data Swamp that covered several Missouri-specific resources. We're also very fortunate in Missouri that faculty from St. Louis University and Washington University in St. Louis offer a course called Evidence-Based Decision-Making. And there's a module that shows how data plays a part in that that MICA has always been included in. Our section, which is called the Section for Epidemiology and Public Health Practice, also has long given many presentations upon request, so for different groups, committees, coalitions, that sort of thing. But about 8 years ago, we started to realize that maybe MICA wasn't getting enough time for the types of detailed explanations that might be needed to teach people how to use a complex web data query system. So this is going to sound completely fantastical, but Missouri was receiving the CDC's Assessment Initiative grant, or AI grant, at that time in support of the development of our tools, and they called up or sent notices out saying that they had extra money. That doesn't happen anymore. But at the time, they called all of the grantees and told them they would like them to spend it. Again, that sounds very amazing. But my supervisor, Andrew Hunter, who's here today, pitched the idea that this supplemental funding should be used to provide more detailed training to the local agencies. So he worked with some of the other staff, and I personally am very fortunate because the position that he supervised was open, and I'm told, I don't really remember, but I'm told that in my interview, I famously said, giving trainings would be awesome. So here we are today. So again, we worked with several staff in the department. We have a photo of some of those people here. But I should emphasize that while we only have 5 people who really go out and do the trainings, it takes many, many more to keep our MICA tools up and running. There's actually about 40 people within our section who work on MICA and data. Again, this is only a fraction of them. These are the people that I could sweet talk into coming out to the parking lot so I could take their photos. So knowing that Missouri has this health data training, if you're interested in implementing some type of similar program in your state, how would you go about doing that? Well, we're going to walk you through the steps. The first thing that we did was send out a survey to our local public health agencies. Remember, we have 115, so a lot of people got it. We worked with our Center for Local Public Health Services at the state level. They act as the liaison between the state health department and all of these agencies. So they provided a little over 300 email addresses to the agency administrators, planners, and health educators. So we sent them a survey asking how they have used the MICA tools, what types of questions do they need data to answer, and asking how interested they would be in coming to a training. When we got their responses, it really confirmed to us that a lot of them did not have a very strong background in statistics, so that was one of the immediate needs to be met. So when we were putting together our curriculum, we looked through our tools and tried to find good examples that were most relevant to showing how you would use crude versus age-adjusted rates, how you would use different statistics like ranking quintiles, and how to incorporate statistical significance through confidence intervals. So when we first started planning the courses, we envisioned that most of the work during the day would be done within our online tools. We did develop a few PowerPoint slides to clarify some of the more complicated points. And we also decided that we should write a handbook, because we've been to many trainings where you come away with just the PowerPoint slides or the notes you've jotted down, and then you get back to the office and can't remember what it was they said. So we wrote it all out in a handbook that each participant gets to keep. So once you've developed your curriculum, how do you go about marketing this, making people know that the resource is available? Well, in the early days, we used that contact list that our Center for Local Public Health Services helped us build. Again, we sent it out to those three roles of administrators, planners, and educators. Some of them had forwarded their survey on to a few other local partners, so some of them wrote in and let us know that they might be interested as well. We also placed an ad in our Missouri Department of Health's weekly Friday Facts newsletter. So that was another way to get it out to people that we might not have had contact information for. So I will tell you that one of the lessons learned is that we started out with a paper registration form, which is a lot of work. So I would encourage you, if you do something similar, to go electronic. That makes it much easier for you to keep track of. You're not having to do data entry. It also really helps, we've learned, if you send out electronic calendar appointments so people can put it on their calendar right away. That has really upped our attendance rate. And it also, since you're getting people's registrations constantly, you can keep track of how many people are signed up. We found that in particular areas of the state, we sometimes have to do targeted marketing. So we'll make phone calls or send emails to groups that we know about to ask them if they can help us spread the word to other organizations that we might not be aware of would have a need for this. So once you've done your marketing, how do you convince people that they should come and listen to you talk about health statistics for 6 long hours? Well, in that first year, the Center for Local Public Health really gave us a hand because they made it mandatory for any agency that was up for renewing their core contract with the state. They also really strongly encouraged each agency to send at least 2 people for shared learning purposes so that they'd have a backup. We also tried to make it as easy as possible for people to attend by going out to them. So over the years, we have been to some of the most rural parts of the state, as well as some of the most urban. We also don't charge anything for people to attend. In fact, we've been fortunate through our grants that we can offer mileage reimbursement, usually only for people who have to travel a round trip of 50 miles or more. And in what I call the golden age of MICA training, we used to have funding to provide lunch to all the participants. We are no longer allowed to do that, but if you can make that work in your state, that would be great for you. So even after you get them to sign up to listen to you for 6 hours, you really want to keep their attention for that amount of time. And we decided the best way to do that would to make the courses very meaningful. So the first thing we decided was that this had to be hands-on. All of our courses are held in computer labs like the one you see in the photo, and we've been very fortunate over the years to partner with colleges, universities, local health agencies that have labs. We've used high schools, we've gone to hospitals, but we try to make sure that each participant has their own computer. So they get to work along with us as we demonstrate real-world examples of how you might use the tools. They work along, usually in their own community, regardless of what community we pull up on the screen. We also incorporate exercises at various points throughout the day so that they can practice the skills that we've covered. And as soon as they finish working the exercises, we do review them, and at the end of the day, we provide an answer key. So even though you make things meaningful, again, I cannot stress to you how long 6 hours of health statistics can be. So we decided very early on that we really needed to try to liven this up. And at the end of our very first session, our last session in that first year, one of the participants was walking out the door, and we overheard him say, "I was really dreading coming to this, but that was actually kind of fun." And we said, yes, because that had been our goal, and we had worked hard to do it. Because if you can make it fun, people will actually pay attention and learn something. So we've built in games using jelly beans and pennies to illustrate statistical significance and how to use confidence intervals. We throw in a lot of jokes and stories, either about the data itself or sometimes about past classes and adventures we've had. We throw in some fun photos and quotes on our slides. And we also travel with some mascots. Perhaps they seem unlikely. But one set of our mascots involves the Smurfs. One of them has come with me today. So they get to go to some very cool places like the CSTE conference in Boston or to the Population Center of the United States, which was in Missouri at the time. But sometimes they find themselves in some pretty lousy situations too. So you never know. Our other mascot is Dwight Schrute from the TV show The Office. And I should say that we're very fortunate that even on a limited state budget, we've been able to get both this bobblehead version and also a live-action version who sometimes comes to the trainings with us. So how did we do that first year? We ended up getting 85 people from local public health agencies to attend the course. We also had 7 staff from the state health department. 5 of those were nurse consultants who work at the state district offices, usually in areas where we were traveling. And we also had 1 person who worked from a county health collaborative. One of the local agencies had called and said they were working with her and she was really good with data and could she please come instead of them? So we said, sure, why not? At the end of the course, we did provide an evaluation form. It had several items that they could score about different parts of the course and then also about the workshop overall. And we were very pleased to see that on a 5-point scale, we scored at least a 4 on all of the overall workshop items. So we increased their knowledge. They thought we gave fairly clear explanations. They really liked the handbook. And overall, they felt that the course met their expectations for a training like that. We also give them the chance to write in some comments, and when we read through some of those, we were very happy. We got things like, "I learned a lot and feel much more comfortable using all of these tools," and perhaps our favorite was the one at the bottom, "This has been the most helpful training I have gone to in a long time." When we did further analysis of some of the comments, we realized that the things that they liked best were the hands-on aspect, the demonstrations that they get to follow along with, and having time to practice through the exercises. We were a little surprised to see, though, that they really wanted another day of training. Who would have thought? So we came back the next year. This is my boss, Andy. You can see he was pretty excited. He was rocking out in the parking lot about it. So in the second year, we added a second day of training with some new statistical topics. We started teaching them about years of potential life loss, life expectancy, looking at some things like percentage change. And we also covered a couple of additional data resources that we've been getting lots of questions about, like the county health rankings and how those differed from our tools. Participants had also told us on the first year eval that they knew how to go in and get numbers, but they weren't really sure how to communicate those in their community. So we covered how to address different audiences, different types of formats that people should use, so tables, charts, maps, or narrative. And then also, we especially focused on the types of charts to use. We built in a couple of scenarios where we walked them through the whole process of pulling data, analyzing it, and writing something up about it because they said they wanted an example. And eventually, we built in more games with prizes. So in the second year, we had about the same number of people come to course one. We had a few more in course two because some of the first year people came back for it. But our biggest surprise was the increase in the number of non-local public health agency attendees. Remember we had that one lady in year one who came? She sent out our year two materials to all of her contacts all over the state, and we had a lot more people than we expected want to come. The comments were very good again, but we were shocked again to see that they wanted to come back for a third day. That, I know. A lot of the people wanted time to work with their own data while we were there to help them, and they also wanted us to take a look at some of the documents that they had worked on. So we were feeling a little braver, and we came up with more of an informal workshop in year three. In this one, we built in a review game to cover some of the topics from courses one and two. We also did sort of a big group exercise in how to download and present data. And we also did give participants the chance to submit the document they had worked on ahead of time. We looked at it, we wrote up some comments, and then they also got to share it in the class to get some peer feedback. So when we looked at our evaluations that year, courses one and courses two were holding pretty steady. We had a little bit less people attend course three. I would say that our evaluation scores and comments were pretty good across all three, but we got the sense from reading some of the workshop comments that maybe we weren't quite there as much as we were with days one and two. We were seeing things like, maybe you should dedicate half the morning on creating a document, then critiquing it in the afternoon. So in later years, we improvised a little. Instead of doing a big group exercise, we started having them do either individual or small group exercises. They go in and pull their own data, write a paragraph about it, make a chart, and then they present it if they're brave enough to do so. We don't make them if they're not. We also tweaked some of the game and the review exercises, but we did build in a few additional data resources. We typically look at things like some of the Census Bureau tools. And after we did those changes, we did get better comments, such as this one, which was from our most recent year. The whole day was a very effective way to help crystallize the previous 2 days. So we felt like we were doing really well. We were kind of on a roll, knew what we were doing, and then, as sometimes happens in public health, our funding source ended. And we literally found ourselves broken down at the gas station at the end of our very last AI-funded trip. So what do you do when that happens? Well, luckily, in addition to doing this travel for the local public health agency, we had offered several sessions internal to Department of Health staff. And so somehow, as things tend to do, word got out that we were out of money. But luckily for us, we started getting some phone calls. So our Office of Primary Care and Rural Health called and said that they would be happy to provide some funding if we could open the trainings to rural hospitals. Our Office of Minority Health got in touch with us and said that they could also provide some money if we would open it up to some of their partnerships across the state. The state began going through accreditation through FAB, which we just learned a little bit about, and our Office of Performance Management had a grant to improve relationships and training between the state and locals, and they felt like this was a good program that should go on, so we had some money from them. Eventually, we were able to write the courses into our Preventive Health and Human Services Block Grant because it simply expanded on some of the data dissemination activities we already had included in that funding source. So looking back, you can tell from these photos here that Andy and I were very happy at how the program had gone. Remember that first year I told you that it was mandatory for people to attend? After the first year, it was not, but people still kept coming. And we thought after a couple of years that we might be saturating the market and we'd start to see people stop signing up. Well, that actually has not happened. Instead, we have started to have sold-out concerts. Remember when I told you that our Center for Local Public Health had assisted us in getting the 300-some addresses? Well, since that time, over the past 6 years, our contact list has grown from about 300 to 400 names to over 3,500. And this past summer in 2014, when we sent out our summer registration link, we had some of our Metro classes especially fill within 2 business days of us opening up the link. We have locations request that we come to them. We do continue to have high demand, both around the state and also internally. And in fact, another state agency recently contacted us and wants us to set up some trainings for some of their partners. So as of the beginning of this summer, before we did any of our recent trainings, we had taught almost 700 people in course one, about 550 in course two, and around 100 in course three. So in course three, the numbers there are quite a bit lower because it's a newer class for one. We typically open it up to a smaller number of participants because of the discussion aspect. And for various reasons, we haven't offered as many of them over the years. So now we get enough questions about the trainings that we've set up a training website, and we'll provide that link to you here at the end of the presentation. Based on some of our participants' comments and requests for more frequent communication from us, we've also set up a quarterly newsletter that you can access from that training website. So it includes updates to the tools, shows how we might use data on several different types of projects, and gives them some practice problems that they can work through. So what these trainings have done, both for us individually and for our section, is to give us many more opportunities to network with our data users. We get many invitations to speak at various events, so conferences, different meetings, those sorts of things. And we also get to talk to them and get better feedback. So all in all, this has led to us being able to provide better customer service. We have developed some new resources, such as a list for helping them track progress on Healthy People 2020 indicators using more local data sources because of this increased interaction. And right now we are currently working on updating our MICA system, our web query system of tools. And so as we move forward with that, it's become even more critical that we get feedback from our actual users. We do envision that we'll offer some additional training and probably have to redo some of our current trainings once that new system goes live. So we'll continue to seek that kind of input from them. So we've done a couple of user surveys in addition to our training evaluations, and we also do go out to lots of different events to try to get feedback, but our course evaluations tend to be still our most robust source of information from our users. And so here is a snapshot of one of the questions that we asked for each class. We asked them to write in what were the best parts of the training. So we've already talked about the first three top responses, which were the exercises, the hands-on aspect, and the examples and demonstrations, but we haven't talked a whole lot yet about the presenters. Since I am a presenter, this may sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but I like to say that humble people don't make good marketers, so here we go. We get a lot of comments on the evaluation about us and the good job that they think we do. Here's an example of one of them. You guys are awesome trainers. You did an epic job of keeping it interesting and pacing the course. So if you're trying to develop your own program, how many people do you need, and how do you go about finding good trainers? Well, as you can see here, it really takes a special kind of person to do this. We started out with just two trainers, Andy and myself. One of us would stand in the front and present, and the other one would float through the audience and help the participants. As you might imagine, there are technical difficulties. Sometimes people get behind, so it really did take both of us to do it. This worked very well for 3 years, but as you can imagine, if you need two people to do something well and you don't have anybody trained as a backup, things go badly very quickly if one of you ends up in the hospital for a long period of time. This is especially problematic if the script is only in your head and not on paper, because then it's very difficult for somebody else to step in at the last minute. So our lesson learned to you is to write a script from day one. Not only will this help you in an emergency, but if someday you are fortunate enough to expand your training team, as we've been able to do, it will help them get on board and go set off running. So we have been able to expand the team. It's no longer just me and Andy. We've added Whitney Coffey, Evan Mobley, and David Kelly, who were gracious enough to let us use many embarrassing photos of them in this PowerPoint presentation today. And in fact, here we all are again on our debut album cover as rock stars, which is called Stairway to Health. So the reason for the rock star theme is that when our program started to grow, one of our coworkers jokingly started referring to us as health data rock stars. I believe this is a theme that we have taken about as far as we could and should go with it at this point. So what kind of people do you need to find to be health data rock stars? Well, obviously, they're going to need some strong public speaking skills. And this isn't just being able to get up and say the information. You also need to find people who can talk to non-data people. That's one of the things that we've been told we do very well, that we're able to take this very high-level knowledge and translate that to people who don't have that kind of background. So to find those kind of people, sometimes you might have to think outside the box when you start hiring. So, for example, none of the people in this photo have a degree in either public health or statistics, surprisingly. Whitney, who's on the left here, she was an anthropologist. I have degrees in English and business. Evan in the middle studied history and criminal justice. David, who is on the other side of him, was in political science. And Andy is a geographer. So all of us have had some sort of strong statistical component in either our education or experience, so that definitely comes into play, but we're able to apply some of our more general knowledge from the other fields in communicating. And ideally, you'll also try to find people who are capable of laughing at themselves, which I think you can probably tell we do a lot of based on these slides. That's important for a couple of reasons. Number one, whenever you talk in front of people for a long period of time, eventually you will make a mistake, and it's a lot easier to bounce back from that if you have people laughing with you before they start laughing at you. And number two, our participants tell us that the spirit of the courses, all the fun and the silliness, really is what makes them so successful. They say that it makes us more approachable, both during the classes and also as a resource later if they need to contact us for help. And they also tell us that it makes health data seem less scary. So I realize that maybe the slides make us come across as very silly, but all of this silliness has led to health data becoming more accessible and more widely used in the state of Missouri, and that's what it takes to be a health data rock star. And so I just have to say, thank you, CSTE, you've been a great audience.
Thank you. Hey, what a great presentation. It's infectious. Probably a lot of questions, comments out there. We have a couple of minutes here before the next speaker. Andy, you get credit for your personnel skills and recruiting and hiring.
Yeah.
Does anybody... Oh, go ahead.
Do you have your resources on like your website? Like, if we just go look at the manual or...
Yes, we do. On this website right here, and I'm glad you said that, because I have some club cards for our band that I will hand out that has the address on the back. So we do have our day one and day two handbooks. We also have our agendas, our objectives, and our evaluation forms posted as well. And so you could use those and modify those for your state if you're trying to develop a similar program. Yes, ma'am? That is something that we are asked sometimes, especially by grant funding, about the impact. It's something that we wish we could train a little better, or that we could learn to do a little bit better of. We've done a follow-up survey, I believe, in late 2011, maybe early 2012, where we asked some of them how they used it. So we got a little bit of responses there. That's something that we hope to do more of in the future, is to try to track that a little better. We've had people come up anecdotally and tell us that they've used the trainings to help them get grants and had quite a bit of success in doing that. And we've also had people at the state health department say that they can tell it's making an impact because they see people in some of their partnership groups who say they have used the tools that they never thought would have been able to use health data on their own, that they used to get a lot more calls to walk them through or just simply provide the data, and now the groups are able to do that on their own. That's a good question. It was whether we've been able to offer continuing education. What we have been able to do in Missouri, we do have a state accreditation program, Missouri Institute for Community Health, MICH, and so they do give credit for accreditation for attending the classes. Our State Department of Health also does give credit for health department employees because we have to get so many hours of training. But as far as the official continuing education, that's not something that we've done, but perhaps it's something we should consider. Do any of you have health data training programs in your state already? Or anybody trying to develop one? So I'm glad this was relevant for one person. Thank you for coming. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have a team at the central office to help make sure that the data is okay? Because we deal with a lot of like duplicate records and other things of the sort. So how do you make sure that the data set itself is okay for the people in the field?
So that's a very good question. question too, is how do we make sure that the data is of good quality for people to use? Going back to that slide where we had the picture of all the people, we do have about 40 staff who work on our MiCA tools, and so usually a particular data set, there'll be between one and maybe three or four people who work on it, and so they do a lot of the data cleanup and the processing and the getting it into the right format to be loaded into the tools. So they tend to become experts in that topic area, that data, and so they do pretty intensive testing before we load it into the tools. Believe me, many of the newer analysts love how much data checking we do. Any other questions?